and all that's the truth. When several barges in the front first deck were stacked high and the rabbit appeared to indicate the last bale of cotton, room was made for the passengers. At last came the call, all aboard. Leading the way was Colonel Robinson and Miss Sally, followed by others, among them a certain Yankee, Mr. Just then a little darky called Miss pushed her way through the watching crowd with the intention of waving at the deckhands, but instead she set her eyes on Colonel's trunk. Screaming unmercifully, she attracted the attention of everyone. Sweet Jesus, look at that fool nigger standing on his side of his trunk. In no time at all, the Maggie F. Buick was out in full stream. Her master captain, Owen, called to the pilot, steer by Johnson's Woodyard and load to the hilt. It's going to take steam to get this load to Mobile Wharf. In the pilot house, a stalwart man, barely out of his teens, was tubbing like a veteran. Bob, later captain of several stern wheels, knew the river, the shallow waters, the bends and the banks, so he guided and glided the boat to the woodyard. Meanwhile, Mrs. was in her stateroom with the chambermaid unpacking her bags. Colonel had made sure the trunk was on board, and in his usual genial manner was pacing around the second deck, meeting the people and making friends with the passengers. He stopped in for a bit of talk with the boat officials after he went by to the bar for his favorite mint julep with Mr. At mealtime, he and Miss Sally sat at the captain's table where sumptuous meals were served and goodwill ran high. On the second day out, Colonel remembered, he'd almost forgotten, that certain Yankee named Mr. What had become of him? An extensive inquiries. Nobody knew. Could not be found. He had left the boat unseen. After arriving in Mobile, Colonel made ready to get over to the railway station where he and Miss Sally would get a train for New Orleans. A hack was ordered for themselves and a dray for their luggage. They then discovered, to their utter dismay, there was no trunk. Now, Captain, in his true Irish nature, made the very air sizzle with his language. He ordered every inch of the boat, the wall, the wet search. Pat Lyons and his motor clerk were veritable Sherlock Holmes, but no trunk. They then put two and two together, for there was still no mystery. Like magic, they had both disappeared. The trunk contained crinolines and furbelows, which Miss Sally was to wear in the famous, fabulous city of New Orleans, and then there was a diamond ring belonging to her daughter, Ella, which had been loaned to Miss Sally for the occasion. What would her daughter Ella think? Oh, Colonel, cried Sally. That's exactly what she called her husband, Colonel. How can I tell Ella? Ella will understand, he said. We will buy her a set of the finest jewelry in New Orleans. Now, since it had been circulated, the valuable papers were in that trunk. Things began to clear up. The veritable Sherlock Holmes, they figured the whole thing out. Had bought slaves from an old man in Maryland, paying him $30,000 for 40 of them. He sold them for the United States currency, not Confederate money, and that was just prior to the Civil War. The old man in Maryland had tried to prove that Colonel did not pay United States currency for the slave, thereby making the debt past due and unpaid. This Mr., however, was that old man's son-in-law, an attorney in the guise of a detective. He had come to do what he thought he could do, steal the important papers, the receipts which certified that the 40 slaves had been paid for, and that in United States currency. Poor Mr. He got the trunk all right. It couldn't possibly have been anybody ill. After the trip to New Orleans, Colonel and Miss Silas sat by the fireside musing over the episode.